You're listening to the New Utah Podcast with your hosts, Bree.
People can say my name and I still don't pay attention.
Chris.
This is what happens when your number one health concern in the state is porn.
Jeremy.
Flicks it and then walks up and just kicks the living crap out of whoever.
I don't know.
It's fine. Just go
I guess
with
it'll
it.
Work.
Take two.
Episode 411 of the New Utah Podcast.
If at first you don't succeed, try again.
Just keep doing it. Just start over and over and over again. we're on location this week at Caputo's.
Yeah. It smells really good here. Oh, that delay.
Take off your headphones then.
Or just take off one ear.
Yeah, I can't. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Can't do it when I can hear myself while I'm still talking.
You're spoiled.
I think this
is how it used to be all the time.
I don't think so. That it doesn't matter.
It does. It's annoying. It's really difficult to work and hear yourself, like, reverberate.
Yeah. Anyway.
So we're joined by Adriana, the Director of Education. Wow, I can't talk
Edumacation.
Because of it. It's been a long day. Director of Education here at Caputo's. And we'll get to her. Welcome.
You can say hi. She's sitting here with us. She can say hi.
Yeah. She's just waving.
She brought us food and drink. Yeah,
there's a ton of food over there.
Yeah, it smells really good.
I'm excited.
I can take it away.
Did you get like one of everything?
Almost. All my favorites.
I don't see a giant cheese wheel from the cheese cave. So.
But there are cave cheeses. I got
you. That's good.
That's good. That's good. We like those. Yeah, she's going to take hers off too.
It's funny because none of our listeners will even notice the delay.
No.
Because it's just
But I can't listen to myself talk at the same time that I'm talking already.
That's okay. As long as we can hear each other, we'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's all good.
I think it's the eclipse. It's the eclipse's fault.
Okay. Probably. Let's blame on it.
It was only partial, so. I did see a video of Starlink satellite going across the eclipse.
Oh, I did too. And it's like, it looks like there's like a big black ink blob on the earth.
Yeah. And then it passed under the eclipse, so it went totally dark for like half a second.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Cause you know, they're moving so fast.
Where was that at? Like in Texas or somewhere where you had like full view?
No, I think it was like in Indiana.
It was in outer space.
Well, but I mean, the black spot was at the time, I think was in Indiana.
I don't know. It's somewhere in the U.S. It just kind of floated over.
I watched it with the special glasses, but here in Utah, it was only about half. It was like the bottom half. It was still cool looking, but
it was cool.
Like Sean and Vanita went to Texas, and it was all overcast.
Oh,
I mean, they got some pictures, but yeah, it was cloudy.
But we've had two in Utah in the last like 5 years that were like just over the border in Idaho that were pretty close to full.
Has it been two or has it been three now?
No, just two. This would be the third one in the last few years.
Okay.
Because we had the one that went up through Idaho, and then last year when I went to California, we had the one that was...
It's like 80% here or something.
Yeah. And it was total down south where I was, so we got to see the total eclipse.
I saw a really cool... So a photographer did a engagement photo where he is asking her to marry him, and she caught it right when it was totally done with... It's called the diamond ring on the eclipse anyway, where there's just the little glint. Right when he's kneeling down. It was really cool.
Oh, that's cool. Still doesn't beat my proposal.
No, but it was really cool.
I mean, that's pretty unique, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once in a lifetime, for sure.
How'd you propose, Jeremy? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
In front of a waterfall.
What waterfall?
My husband proposed in front of a waterfall, too, but mine was glacial.
What?
But mine was glacial.
True. No, mine was in Salt Lake, so... Yeah.
Was it ever Memory Grove?
I felt in that area.
You don't know where. Back you just don't want to tell us where.
Well, they've like redone all that and they like redirected the water and all that. So like,
where you proposed doesn't exist?
No.
Where Chris proposed to me doesn't exist anymore.
That's true.
Yeah, it was like a day later. It was gone.
And where this guy proposed, it doesn't exist either.
No, that place is still there.
The situation doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I feel like you're drunk today.
Construction at your house.
Construction at our house, yes. Unfortunately. We're still working on the closet rebuild, and this next time we record, the house will be...
I'm really glad.
Totally messed up.
I'm really glad we're here this week.
Yes.
And not at the house. So we're redoing our closet. Like, we knocked out a wall, made a bigger closet. So all of our clothes are in the studio, and they were in my office. But I had to move them out of my office so I could take a proctored exam, and moved them into the studio, and the rack broke. The, like, temporary rack.
So it's leaning against our podcast studio chairs.
And I'm so...
So it was really good timing to be off-site.
The carpet should be in next Tuesday morning, so we should be able to build new racks and move all the clothes back upstairs.
By the time we record next week.
Yes.
That's what I'm hoping. But also, whoever the guest is next week has to deal with, like, all three bedrooms worth of furniture in the rest of the house.
Yeah. So,
it'll be fun.
It'll be fine.
It'll be awesome.
It's fine. Just like it's fine that the microphones are echoing and we don't have our headsets on. It's fine.
I have mine on. I kind of have
it half on.
Jeremy, you should just take it all the way off.
I know, but I can't hear you because I'm deaf.
Yeah, that's true.
Whatever.
Old and deaf.
I want to open this drink, so I'm going to.
You got your new chickens?
I did. So we got the Jersey Giants came in last week. So right now they're the same size as the other chicks, but they're really dense.
So they're like, they're thick.
Yeah, and then they're supposed to...
THICC thick.
Yes. Like a thick chick.
Yep.
So the ones that we got a couple weeks ago that are already about a month old, these should surpass those in size in about 2 weeks. So I was reading up a little bit on the Jersey Giants, and they were designed. They were bred to compare with turkeys.
Oh, wow.
So like, it's going to be as big as a turkey?
Not quite, but almost. Because during World War II, the turkey shortages, I guess there were turkey shortages. So it was two brothers in New Jersey that bred the Jersey Giants to try to get them to be about the size of a turkey.
So are they all black?
So that they could sell them in place of turkey during the war. So they don't get quite as big as a turkey, but close.
So are they all black?
Yeah. So there's different kinds, but the IFA just has the black ones. But they have a black, a white, a speckled, and something else. But yeah, black is what they have.
Be too big for any of the stuff in the coop?
No, it should be okay. I hope we'll find out. I got six. We'll see.
So now you guys have six Jersey Giants you could name. So
that's right.
Let us
that's
know.
Right.
Yeah, patreon.com.
Our Patreon.
TNUP.
$100 donation to our Patreon. You get to name one of my chickens. And then bees, because the wonky weather we're having, our bees should be in the last weekend of April, first weekend of March, sometime in there is what they said at IFA.
You mean May?
May.
Or May.
Yeah, you put March on here too, but you know that March is over.
May.
It's done.
Today was a little crazy, and I was a bit rushed to get the notes done, but yes, end of April, first part of May, our bees should be in, so... That gives me time to hopefully get my beehive.
Well, I want you to get them before I leave for my cruise so that I can go over
and help. Yeah.
He'll hopefully. Have them. I can't imagine they'd be past May.
Yeah, we're not leaving till May 17th.
Yeah, oh no, they'll be here before that. It's weather related, but I think the latest they've ever come is like halfway into the first week of May is like the latest they've ever come. Usually it's about the third week of April, but due to weather, because I'm pretty sure they all come out of California. But the weather has to be decent there and here for the transportation so they don't show up with a truckload of dead bees.
Yeah, that would be bad. Bad.
Yep, so Jersey Giants. So I'll keep you posted over the next couple weeks.
So how many chickens does that bring you to?
Let's see. About 36, I think, total.
That's a right good farm there.
You should see. The podcast listeners can't see Adriana's face.
The look on her face.
That's a lot of chicken.
Yeah. It is.
It's not worth doing home chickens if you don't have at least like.
But
they did math during COVID when people were getting like one or two chickens or whatever, and the coop and stuff.
Yeah.
So they actually did the math on how many chickens you would need to have to offset the cost of having chickens.
We've had chickens for probably about 15 years, I think. And yeah, we sat down and because to feed them and your time and your effort and all that kind of stuff. If you don't have about 20, it's cheaper to just go buy eggs at the store. then to buy the feed, and then just the time and the effort and everything that's involved with it. And then my chicken coop, sorry, listeners, this isn't going to mean anything to you. My chicken coop is probably from about this table to the window back there, and it's got an inside part, a partially outside part, and a completely outside part. So I've got plenty of room for, I could house probably 50.
You have a resort.
No, I just live in Riverton.
Mm. You have a chicken resort.
And yes. I'm on about half an acre, so I've got the room for it.
What do you call the...
Gates Family Farm.
No, the coop. You have a name for it.
Chick Chalet.
The Chick Chalet.
Like Chick-fil-A, but it's Chick Chalet.
Oh, I love that.
And then when we were building the new part, the kids were calling it Cluckingham Palace because of how big it is.
Yeah. It's quite the thing. And then the bees are like right behind it.
Yeah, bees are right behind it. But all the years we've had bees, they've never bothered the chickens. But honeybees are not wasps. And honeybees, for the most part, as long as you're not sticking your finger in the hive or like my stupid dogs who go bark at it, they really don't bother you.
They don't
you.
Care.
Like,
they'll just leave you alone. They leave you alone. You leave them alone.
Our pool's out there. The kids are out there. I mean, because we've had bees for... Well, let's see. We've had chickens for 16, 17-ish years. We've had bees for 13, 14. So it was only a couple of years after we started the chickens that we did the bees. But yeah. In all those years, I've probably been stung twice. And once was because a bee got in my jacket.
Yeah.
And then...
The dogs are stupid, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
at least Ebo was.
Ebo, our dog that we lost that passed away last... 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
To just go, he would, every year, he'd go out and he'd bark at the beehive and they'd sting him. And then he'd be fine the rest of the season.
But every year, he'd get stung.
Every year, he got stung. It's a wiener dog.
Yeah.
Not the brightest.
No, he was thick, too.
He was.
He was a 35-pound wiener dog.
He's like... Yeah. My eyes it's are like big again.
Yeah. A sausage with little legs.
It was funny because you'd kind of forget, and then you'd go to pick him up, and you'd be like...
Yeah, dense. Because
he's on the ground, and he's low. But
yeah,
like,
so small, you'd think he'd be like a little 12-pound dog. No, he was...
He had the stubbiest legs, too. They were like not even 6 inches long.
Yeah. He was not all the way off the ground.
No. But he could catch rats.
He was practically a worm.
He would catch rats.
Well, that's what he was bred for. So.
That is what dachshunds were used for.
Yeah, they're originally hunting dogs for badgers. So dachshund means badger hound in German. And they were bred to go in badger holes.
That's why their legs are so short.
I aspire to be a wiener dog mom wiener someday. Dog. I have a name picked out. I'm ready.
There you go.
I am learning things that I need to know for me personally right now. Yeah.
They're all good things to know.
Should be a little bit closer.
Oh, yeah, a little closer.
We didn't hear.
We didn't give you a lesson. Well, we should give everybody a lesson, but...
How's this? Am I better now?
Yes.
Better.
Can
better.
I stay? Thank you.
You got to be like right up on it. So that it doesn't pick up all of this, you have to direct your voice into it. So yeah.
I can turn her up a little bit.
Perfect. I can follow the rules.
I am drinking Ham's Cheers Queers, and it's a white peach champagne, and it's really good.
Who makes those?
This is from Hans Kombucha. They're a... local kombucha with a phenomenal bar. This is my favorite one. So
it's so good, and the can is really pretty.
So should we get into it?
Yeah, of course. So, okay, first question for you, Adriana.
Have we properly introduced Adriana? Yeah, we did at the beginning. Sorry.
At the beginning, yeah.
We had
did
two
we?
Starts.
We had two starts. Well, did we do it the second time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it sounded like I was drunk saying Director of Education.
Oh, yeah, but I think that's when I was taking off my headset.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So anyway, we're at Caputo's. So Adriana,
we're at downtown Caputo's specifically. Yes.
Third and third.
The original.
The one by the park. Right?
The OG.
The OG Caputo's.
The OG Caputo.
Home of the Cheese Cave. I didn't know you had this.
It's technically a separate business, but one of our favorites. So also home to Aquarius Fish Market.
But accessible through Caputo's.
My daughter is an Aquarius.
Do they have their own entrance or only
they through They do. Caputo's? Yeah, it's right just to the... far side of ours.
They have like lots of fresh fish, like sushi grade from the looks of some of it. That's
my
awesome.
They pick it up at the airport every morning to bring it here.
Oh, there you
they
go.
They do a great job.
My daughter has been wanting to learn to make sushi, and Chris has a sushi kit, but he hasn't done it, so I promised her he would teach her how to make it. Did you know that?
But I assume. So, Adriana, when's your birthday?
December 20th.
Ooh.
So March 20th.
So just recent.
What's
springtime, early spring, your parents went to a concert. Maybe Barry
Manilow? They were conceiving you.
Are they Fanilows?
No.
No?
But around this time of year, your parents were getting down.
Yeah.
It was an Easter celebration.
Oh, could it? Well, depends.
Easter was really early.
Nobody knows when Easter's going to be. The magic
special. I know,
special.
But it could have been Easter, so I just decided that.
Something in the
because this year was the 31st, but next year it's going to be April 20th.
Something with goat entrails to figure out when Easter is. I don't know.
That's not Easter. That's the pagan holiday. Same time frame.
Okay.
All right, then.
That's good.
Isn't that good?
So let's talk about how you became, like, where were you born?
Yeah.
Here in Utah?
I was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Okay. I moved here when I was 12. And the first time somebody asked if I was LDS, I thought they were offering me drugs. So I had no idea what I was getting into as a kid. I was just like, this place is wild, guys. What are we doing here?
So my daughter's... Parents, what brought your parents here? Work?
My dad's job.
Was he military?
No, he works in hospital administration, so we moved for St. Mark's.
Because we got a lot of people.
Was he the hospital administrator at some point?
Mm-hmm.
Was his name?
Tom Pacelli.
Huh.
Cardiology.
I worked at the Utah Hospital Association from about, 18 until, I don't know, and then I actually worked in St. Mark's administration for 3 years, about 10 years ago.
He may have moved on since then, but I remember that being a really, really great position for him for a really long time. It kept us here. And then they left and I stayed.
Yeah.
Do you ever miss New Mexico?
I miss it a lot. I definitely feel like a desert girly. It's on my body, actually. I have New Mexico tattooed on me, but this is home now. I love it a lot.
So you've been here since you were 12?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go back at all or?
I was there last week.
Just to visit, but...
Yeah.
My daughter's godmother lives in
Never to live.
So where'd you go to high school then?
Cottonwood.
Cottonwood.
Go Colts.
Cottonwood, what's the mascot?
Colts.
A Colt.
The Colts.
She just said the Colts.
See, I can't hear. I'm deaf.
I know. I've been talking, and you just, totally ignore me. So
I
just
have one in.
Shake my head.
Just sorry. I'm
shake,
old.
Shake my head. Dude... I mean, you're older than me, but 7 days, so. I think it's time for you to get some hearing aids.
I have hearing aids, I just don't wear them. So, how many siblings do you have?
I have two, both younger than me, so I am the eldest.
The trailblazer.
Are you Italian?
I am. So the Caputos are from Calabria, so the toe of the boot. My family's from Basilicata, which is kind of like the arch. So we're neighbors, and we have the same kind of fiery personalities. And
you guys are the part of the boot that kicks ass.
Thank you.
My family's from Compobosa, kind of northern Italy.
Okay.
My family's from
Spain.
I'm going
to have to look that up.
I'll have to look that one up. Yep. So my family's Italian. My great-grandpa came from Italy.
You know, people can't hear you when you turn completely away.
My great-grandpa came from Italy.
8 years.
His last name was S-C-U-I-L-L-I-O. Squilio.
S-C-U-I-L-L-O?
L-L-I-O.
Squilio.
Something like that, we're guessing. And when he got to Ellis Island, he changed his name to Gates, which is what a lot of people did. So most people with the last name of Gates are immigrants. And when they got to Ellis Island and they said, what's your name? They would say Gates, because it was the Gates of Ellis Island. And back then, they could care less. They're like, okay.
They changed the spelling of my family's name when they immigrated. It was P-A-C-E-L-L-I, because a C would make a C-H sound.
Pacelli.
And... now that we've changed it and people speak Italian, they keep telling me I'm saying my own name wrong, and that bothers me.
So how long has your family been in the United States? Multiple generations or
I want to say 3 on my dad's side, and then I'm second gen on my mom's side.
Oh, wow. So recent.
So my grandparents moved here, and then my Nono moved back after my Nona passed.
She was like, nope.
He was just like, I'm sick of it here.
He's
I'm going
I'm
back.
Out.
So, you graduated from high school here, then what? Did you go to college? Did you roam about?
I am a Ute.
Ute, yeah, me too.
So, there's sort of these two?
Sort of.
Ish, and yes.
I quit.
I wanted to quit many times.
So, what were you studying originally?
I was studying economics, and I was in college, during that big economic depression, and that was my focus, and it was fascinating. And then, I was working here through college. I started here in... 2007.
I was going to say the 2006-7-8 mm-hmm. bust with yeah. That was horrible.
I watched it unfold like through the lens of education. It was fascinating and I thought I wanted to do it, and then graduation time came and I realized I had no desire to work in the public sector, and I had a massive meltdown behind that chocolate counter. And Matt Caputo, like, carried me into the office and was like, maybe you just stay and we'll make a big kid job for you. So I was the first office employee that didn't work on the floor.
Oh, so wow. So what were you doing before that? Before he...
I was working behind the counter.
I was just slinging cheese and having the time of my life.
Now. So if I wasn't an architect, I think I'd be a cheesemonger.
I think everybody should work in cheese.
I love cheese.
You learn about yourself
so
when you work in cheese.
For 1 year, we really wanted to get Chris a cheese wheel for his birthday. They're so expensive.
You should still.
That's true. Your birthday's coming up.
You could get him a small wheel.
No,
but he wants
like the big Parmigiano.
That's what
yeah, like, you know, when they make the, what's the stuff where they cook it in the...
Roquette?
But no. when they cook it in the wheel? Yeah, yeah. I can't think of what it's called.
Like Cecilia Mia does,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's so tasty.
When they're making I can't even think of the name of the pasta now.
Fettuccine?
Cacio e pepe.
Oh, yeah.
But at the time when we were looking, I think the cheese wheel was like $1,200.
That's about what it is with discounts and everything. I mean, you get like a full wheel discount. Like, we'll try to make it as accessible as possible, and it is still not cheap.
No. Each of you would have to kick in like $100. I think we have enough friends.
I see how much my friendship is worth to all of you.
But it would be each friend, not each couple.
Does the friend get to also have some of the cheese?
Of course.
Then I think that's kind of an investment in your own happiness.
Yeah, we'll split it up after.
Well, I mean, honestly, he'd probably make you dinner in the cheese wheel.
You got 3 months. His birthday's in 3 months, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm ready to contribute.
See? He's a great cook.
I've been trying this for a few years.
When people ask me my favorite restaurant, I always say it's Chris's Kitchen.
You are blessed.
Yes, I am. Blessed and cursed, because it's really, really hard to diet in my house. Because there's always some sort of food or something happening. Like, for Easter, he made like a New York-style cheesecake with a blueberry lemon compote.
Bummer.
I know, it was horrible.
Real bummer.
I ate the last piece. It was like this big.
Breakfast of champions.
It's like, does anybody else want this? And everybody's like, no. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to eat this whole thing then. And I just took it out. And
definitely terrible to take one for the team there.
So do we want to, we've got this amazing food that we definitely want to talk about. Do we want to pause for half a second?
Yeah.
Can we sample a few things? Because it's kind of hard to talk and
eat. Is that going to mess you up if we pause and eat for a sec, or
no,
should we eat on the mics?
Just eat on the mics.
All right.
I don't care.
Let's do it.
I can tell you what you're eating while you're eating, so you don't have to.
Why don't you hand that out to us?
I think you should have the namesake first.
All right.
Okay.
I'm down.
Holy cow.
The Caputo.
These are all sandwiches here at the deli.
Yep. These are all ones you can get any day of the week at any of our locations.
There's a cup, Chris. You could try some of the beverages.
Oh.
There's root beer. There's Ghia Aperitivi.
The strawberry fields is pretty
from
good.
From Taproot. Ooh. So this sandwich was developed by Matt Caputo. Tony opened Caputo's in 1997 on the corner of the building we're in now to be a sandwich place. It was supposed to be a blue-collar sandwich joint where you could get like your Italian cold cut and get back to work quickly. And it was successful. And Matt worked at Caputo's from the day it opened and is still now our owner and president. And
so is his dad still around?
No, Tony passed away in 2021.
Oh, so just recently.
Yeah. One of the cheeses you're going to try is named after him. So we have an homage cheese. This one has Genoa salami, prosciutto, mortadella, which is the most important ingredient, in my opinion, provolone cheese, tomato, lettuce, and then balsamic and oil on a very crunchy, classic Italian roll.
That balsamic is amazing.
It totally makes it all come together and work. I've had it without on accident when I've made it for myself, and it is so rich and overpowering, and getting that little bit of acidity really brings it all together.
Yeah, I think a lot of people sleep
on Italian dressing or balsamic on a sandwich. It's such a, it is such an Italian thing, and like traditional American style sandwiches is like thick mayo, mustard, but that vinegar and oil just makes such a huge yeah. difference in flavor balance.
It brings this like light freshness to it that if you were missing it, it would feel so overwhelming and so decadent in a way. I think it really does kind of like liven it up, brighten it up, give it a little bit of juxtaposition to so much other richness.
So who do you guys get your meat through? Because you don't carry your own meats, right?
We do not. That would take a whole other building and a whole other team. We do a lot of different buying from all over. So the salami is made domestically. The mortadella comes from Rovagnati in Milan. It is premier mortadella. I'm going to keep talking about mortadella if you let me. It is the most important part of my existence here at Caputo's.
So good.
The prosciutto is cured in Italy. The bread is from Stone Ground locally. It gets delivered every morning. I think that's a really, really important part, that you still get like some crispness on the outside but softness on the inside. Having it
that
with the
an
wrong bread.
Part of bread.
Yeah. We spent a lot of time during COVID trying to send people the ingredients to make a Caputo, and the bread always got challenging to ship, and if you had on the wrong bread, it
yeah, wouldn't taste
didn't
the same.
Do the thing. But this is by far our most popular sandwich. I mean, I think when people come here, they ask what's good, and the namesake reigns supreme.
I think
it's so good. I can't stop eating it.
On the subject of bread, I mean, people think, like, you go to a crappy sandwich shop like a Subway. It's just soft, and it's not good. And they've taken to toasting, but it's still not the same.
Have you heard the thing where they like would technically classify Subway bread as cake in Europe?
No, but that makes sense.
There's so much sugar in the bread that it is not allowed to be called bread in Europe and is rather cake.
I find that to be true for most American stuff. Like, even like McDonald's, there's sugar in everything. Their buns, their like hamburger patties have sugar content. Like, it's insane. It's such an American thing.
I love a sugary thing, but I want it in places where I know it belongs and not in sneaky places where, like, I think that I'm getting something that might be healthy or just would be void of sweetness.
Yeah, like gelato. That's a place for sugar.
Yes.
A really good gelato.
Bread? Mm-mm.
No, you need enough for the yeast to rise. That's it. Which isn't much.
I love sandwiches. They're so good.
Well, there's more.
There's, like, 17 more things over there.
So there are two more sandwiches. The muffaletta, for me, this is my favorite sandwich. So selfishly, it's always been the muffaletta.
How long has this sandwich been on the menu?
We've had some iteration of the sandwich on the menu since we opened. It's gone through a few facelifts. The bread for this one comes from the bakery next door, Carlucci's. Teresa does a phenomenal job of making this, like, very, very lovely.
This is what I could smell.
Is
when
it?
I was over there that I was like, what is that I smell that's so good? It's the...
The olive salad.
Well, and I love that it's a muffaletta on a big circular roll, not a hoagie style.
And yeah, that's 100% what I could smell. And I was like, there's something over here that smells really good. That was it.
There's no funny business with this one. It is, like, large and in charge.
So do you guys make the muffaletta spread it yourself?
We do. Yeah. That was one of the newest updates we've made. The muffaletta spread was...
I took a bite.
It hits all of the parts of your mouth. It is spicy.
It's sweet. It's cider. It's salty. Yeah. It's spicy.
Is it a banana pepper? What's the...
There are some banana peppers. So there's a jardinera mix that we use from a brand called Marconi at its base. So there's the kind of sport pepper heat that you would see on like a classic Italian beef sandwich from Chicago. That's where we start. There's olives. There are these little teeny tiny red peppers called sweetie drops in there. That's the newest addition. They're like little... You know those little poppers you used to throw like at your parents' feet on the 4th of July? Yeah. They feel like that... for my mouth. Little tiny poppy surprises.
It's like when you eat sushi and you get the little egg stuck and then later you bite down and it just like bursts in your mouth.
A firework.
Yeah, more or less.
I know we're in the middle of doing this, but I need to know what is happening with the wine over here behind us. Well, I guess behind you. It's in front of my face.
We're getting ready for a tour of Italy, Chris.
Oh, shit.
Now there's wine on the floor.
It did not break.
It didn't break.
It didn't break.
Oh.
There we go.
Oh. So that's Francis. He is our resident wine Yoda, our wine educator.
He's the sommelier. Yeah. I love wine.
Francis is responsible for a lot of very delicious wines that are available in Utah. Without him, we would be drinking
beer.
Sadness. Or beer. We'd have really great beer with or without Francis, but we have really good wine, largely in part due to Francis. So he does all of the wine pairings for our cheese classes and our tours of Italy and all the ones that we focus on, but he also teaches all of our wine classes.
So since you're bringing up classes, one of our listeners said that they did the wine class.
I don't know. I told you earlier. Now I have to remember again.
She asked to ask you what other classes you guys
and
have.
How they find and how people find them and all of that kind of stuff.
So our classes are available to sign up when you visit us in store or online.
It was a cocktail class.
There is a cocktail class, and there are lots of cocktail classes now. So if you go to caputos.com, there's a whole section for classes and events. We do classic cocktail classes. If you want to learn just how to make like a Negroni or an Old Fashioned, we can help you with that. We also do what we call a tropical series with the folks that own what was Acme Barco, is now closed down and is going to reopen as a tropical tiki-ish bar. It's part of the Water Witch group. So we do an island time class. We do Mai Tais and zombies and Kingston rum-based Negronis, other classic tropical cocktails. Those are probably our most popular cocktail classes right now. But beyond just cocktail classes, there are wine-focused classes, there are beer classes, there are cider classes. So if you're looking for a way to learn more about what you like to drink or why you like to drink it, those are great. But we also do the things that started it all. So I think our Intro to Cheese is my favorite class we do.
If you want to teach?
Yes.
That's fantastic.
It's my favorite part of the job. And the Intro to Cheese class is my favorite class to teach. I mean, we only eat cheese and talk about cheese for like 90 minutes. I don't want to spend my time doing anything else.
I need to take that class.
Nothing about that sounds bad.
So the Intro to Cheese class, like, how do you teach cheese to people?
We try to, the goal of the class is to empower folks with the knowledge of what they do like and what they don't like. Our expectation is that you'll have lots of cheeses you like and a few that you hate. And you should write those down because then you know to never ask for those styles of cheese ever again. So that when you go out into the big bad world and you're buying cheese, you only buy things that bring you an immense amount of joy. So we give you the vocabulary to talk about what you like. We give you the history on why certain cheeses are the way they are based on their texture or their rind or their flavor. We'll talk about styles, techniques, ways to store it, ways to buy it. We want you to be an expert of your own palate.
We need to take the cheese class.
One thing I've noticed with cheese is if it's used in the proper way, it changes things. So, for example, I used to not like brie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was just something about it. I didn't really like it.
I think that's rude. I'm sitting right next to you.
Sorry. I love brie. It's my favorite cheese.
That's the way
and
it is.
And his favorite wife.
But then I had it melted on like a sandwich on rye, and there was something about it melted because I'd only ever had it just straight. All of a sudden it changed everything, and I'm like, this is so good. And then I found out it was brie, but it was just prepared in a way that I hadn't had it before. So some cheese definitely changes flavor when you cook it or heat it or
totally
or don't. And so I think the cheese class sounds amazing.
I can't say enough about it. I think everybody should take a cheese or chocolate class just to, like, understand your own palate and where you're coming from and, like, what knowing what you like is only going to make your life more delicious in the end.
So I got a question with cheese specifically, because you've taught this class a lot. What is somewhat universally, like, the least favorite cheese or cheese style?
I would say it's what's called a wash-drying cheese. Things like Taleggio or raclette or époisse. They're the very, very
like
stinky ones. Sorry?
People don't like raclette?
Some people don't like raclette. People who are sad don't like raclette.
Limburger is one that can be a bit much.
That totally falls into that category, too. There's a particular bacteria that you use to ripen that cheese that makes it smell like your uncle's feet. And it can be a very pungent smell that gets in the way of you tasting like the sweetness of the paste in the interior. But that experience can be quite off-putting for a huge amount of people. People have made faces. Somebody threw it at me once.
Wow.
I consented to having cheese thrown at me, and somebody made good on it.
What about goat cheese? Is that something you try in that class? Because it's very, very different flavor than most.
We have a friend that just hates goat cheese.
I think most people that think they hate goat cheese often hate Chev, like that fresh type of goat cheese that we're used to seeing, because it has so much of that capric acid that's very native, barnyard-y. Really only in goat's milk cheeses. So you get this very tangy flavor that can be reminiscent of spoiled milk for a lot of people, and that's just enough to hurt your feelings. So I think when you get a goat cheese that's aged, you lose a lot of that tanginess, and I would challenge anybody, if you're listening to this and you think you hate goat cheese, try an aged goat cheese and see if it changes your perception. Maybe you'd only like fresh goat cheeses, or you only don't like fresh goat cheeses.
I love the tanginess. That's what I like about goat cheese.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a cheese, well, since I developed a better palate and got older, but I don't think there's a cheese that I've tried that I didn't like. I can't think of
a
cheese.
We gotta get you to try maggot cheese.
I've not tried maggot cheese.
I didn't like camel cheese.
Camel.
We had a camel cheese one time, and it lasted one time. Mm. And it tasted like the backside of a camel.
So for your cheese room, your cheese cave, like how much of that is produced here? Where do you source the milk?
We don't make any of the cheeses. We just age the cheeses. Okay. So we're sourcing already made or formed wheels. In the case of a few, they're made the day before they're delivered to us, and we do all of the aging. So like in France, the idea or what that's called is affinage. So it has this very different role to play in the development of cheese. But we get ours. We get some from Idaho. We get some from Beehive Cheese up the road.
Oh, Beehive Cheese does a good job.
Beehive Cheese kills it. Our house cheddar is Beehive at its base, and we wouldn't have it any other way. They're magnificent at what they do.
We went to a wine pairing or a beer pairing or something that Beehive Cheese co-sponsored.
Chocolate, cheese, and beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it was.
It was a great
All our favorite things.
Well, I don't like beer, but I eat chocolate and cheese.
I think it was you.
No.
They did a very small batch chocolate beer made with cocoa nibs provided by Chocolate Conspiracy. Oh, my God. It was so good.
Chris, you should try this lime and salt.
So there are some little non-alc aperitivi on the table from Gia.
That's what we're trying.
It's a lovely partner for these.
Yeah.
What is it?
That lime and salt.
You put the lime in the coconut?
You don't have to with this.
Smells good.
It's got a nice tartness to it.
I feel like that's a whiskey drinker's drink. You guys can continue to drink that, and I'll just continue to drink my lovely white peach champagne.
Your cheers, queers.
It's delicious. And it's actually very, very good with everything I've eaten so far.
Is it kombucha?
It is.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's kombucha. You can join Mark now.
It's fine.
But it's well-made kombucha. I feel like there are definitely some out there that just taste like vinegar and trauma. This one
vinegar
does not.
Vinegar and trauma.
I've only had a couple, and they were sadness in a bottle.
I've had some that are punishing, and these gals manage to make it seem effortless, and they do it really, really well.
I'm not sure how to bite into this.
This is,
but I'm just going to do it.
The sandwich, the hot pastrami.
Oh, I love pastrami.
I was going to say, and it looks like fried pastrami.
It was just freshly fried for you right before we started. So this is New York pastrami, this really lovely kind of mustard onion blend. This might have also been part of what you were smelling, because this is
aromatic. It was definitely
aromatic.
The other thing.
So you guys don't make the pastrami, though, either?
No. No, we buy it. We want somebody who is an expert at making pastrami to make our pastrami, and we will just slice it nicely.
Oh, that's lovely.
The mustard on it is so good.
Mustard we do make.
It just really brings out the flavor.
So you grind it yourself? And
we start with mustard powder, but we do add gosh.
I love mustard.
We were just going over the recipe, and I was like, we do all of this for our sandwiches? And they were like, yeah. So all of the managers thought I was just completely off my rocker. But I was like, okay, well, it is that great. So let us continue.
Oh, my gosh. This is so good.
And what bread is this on?
This is on the same stone ground roll. This one gets toasted in the oven to melt the cheese.
Well, so, I like the crispness so that it kind of soaks up a little of the olive oil, but it doesn't get soggy.
This is the pro tip from this podcast. If you are a Caputo sandwich lover, but you want your bread crispier, you can ask to have the bread toasted. Nice. And it can totally change the experience of the sandwich.
And I'm not a huge mustard fan, but the mustard is light and like airy almost. It's not overpowering.
I love mustard. This whole podcast is just going to be me talking into a microphone with my mouth full.
We did come to Caputo's, so in Caputo's, you know, you guys do a lot of, you know, obviously all the deli style sandwiches and everything. But you have a market too, right?
We sure do. The market was born out of Matt Caputo's mind. He started getting really into the really high quality specialty products that we had access to from buying all these cheeses and meats, and we could go one step above. So the space we're sitting in now, that is our deli, was originally the first market that Tony let Matt build and create. So this is where we had our first cheese case, our first meat case, our first shelves. Historically, they were all in this tiny, tiny space on the corner. Matt started building out the market in 2005 or 2006. This was the first place we had our first cheese class, and I was so confused. We'd gone to Tony's cooking classes for years and years, and the first time we came to a cheese class, I was just like, what are all these tiny morsels of cheese, and who's going to teach me how to cook them? But instead, we learned about them, and that was when I fell in love with cheese. But this was the market, and it was also where we really developed our love for craft chocolate. Utah's the craft chocolate capital of the United States.
Is it really?
We have more award-winning chocolate makers here in Utah than anywhere else in the U.S.
I knew
this is why I will
of,
never leave Utah, because I love chocolate.
I knew we had a bunch of them, and I've had a lot of them over the years, but I didn't realize we've got more awards than anyone.
We are the best.
I've kind of become a chocolate snob, and for the most part, I mean, I'll still, like, eat chocolate just because it's there, but, like, if I'm going to have some chocolate, like, I want some, like, unsweetened or naturally sweetened chocolate with chunks
solstice
of something in it,
or
solstice, yeah. Solstice and chocolate conspiracy ritual. I mean, they're all doing such impressive work.
And they're doing different things. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that's crazy, is like their flavor profiles, you would think, because it's just chocolate, would be similar, but they're just so
different. They're like, the consistency is different, the flavor is different, mm-hmm. Everything is different.
Have you met the guys from Chocolate Conspiracy?
Yes.
Of course she has.
If you ever got a chance to talk to them about kind of their background on the show, we've had them on the show a couple of times, but one of the owners, is it Matt?
AJ?
The tall one.
AJ.
Okay.
AJ, the one that started selling it out of his backpack.
So he was making them and going to college, and I don't know how people found out he was making them, but he's walking around college, and after a while he said his backpack was full of chocolate bars, no longer books, and he dropped out of school and was just selling chocolate. And that's kind of where he's like, you know what? I should probably try to make a business out of this. But he has such a passion for it. And he's, how do I put this? He's not put out way more things than he has put out, because he tries everything. He tries putting everything in chocolate. Some are amazing, some are horrible, but he's not afraid to try it. So his story is amazing. Those guys are so cool.
I appreciate him so much. He does things that a lot of other chocolate makers can't do as well. The way he sweetens, mm-hmm. and skips over some things that really drive a lot more like health benefit to it, I think is really admirable. But when people talk about honey and cacao, it is usually enough to scare any chocolate maker, because the honey will make the cacao seize, and it becomes this massive problem, and AJ does it effortlessly.
I know.
And with so much charisma. I think if I were a chocolate maker, I would be very, very envious of his skill set.
Well, and I think if I remember correctly, Caputo's was one of the first to carry, if not the first to carry, his stuff.
I don't know if we were the first. I would love to say that, and I hope that we were some of the first.
I'm trying to remember it, because we had him on the show and talked about it specifically, and I don't remember if it was you guys or if he was working at like the store and got them to do it. Mm-hmm. But you were definitely real early in distribution for him.
They've since moved, but they were right next door to Ruby Snap.
Mm-hmm. We just visited his new factory. It's just a little bit further west and south of here now. Still like a 5 or 10 minute drive, but it is much bigger. It smells divine.
Oh, that space was shiny.
But it was so fun. We got to taste like through the different stages and stuff, like when it's still bitter and then like as it moved to different things when we went through to his shop. It was so awesome.
At the time,
he's such a good teacher.
Yes. He was working. He had soaked nibs in a cherry wine.
Yep.
Oh, a cherry wine. And he was just at the point where he was starting to grind them. And so we were able to taste the straight grind of the cacao that had been soaked in cherry wine.
So I'm not the biggest fan of what are those little chocolate things?
Like kisses?
No.
Truffles.
Oh. I'm not usually a big, huge fan of a truffle. But, oh, my God. His truffles are so good. And the one that has the ground-up cherry stuff that he does, he does it seasonally. I love that. Now I will try truffles everywhere I go because on the off chance that maybe somebody does a good job with their truffle.
A magician. He is a magician.
Yes.
Well, and what's amazing is we have all of these people right here in Utah that you wouldn't even think. But because of, we've talked about this before, like, especially with the craft beer here in Utah, because the rules and regulations are so weird, it's kind of forced Utah to become an amazing craft beer scene. But it's kind of the same with chocolate and some of these other things. We have some amazing people doing some amazing things.
Well, we have some great, dairies, cheeseries, whatever you call them.
Yeah.
Like, what's the one?
Cheeseries?
Cheeseries.
What's the one up in Cache Valley? That, like, every
Cache
cheesemonger.
Cache Valley cheese?
No. Every cheesemonger we've talked to went through that dairy.
All went through there.
Rock Hill?
Rock Hill. Mm-hmm. Rock Hill Creamery, yeah.
So we've had quite a few cheese people on, and every one of them directly or their main cheesemaker all started out up there working for them, and that's where they learned the craft. Well, and so we kept hearing about these cheese awards, and we thought it was a joke. This was probably 5-6 years ago, something like that. Turns out there really is a cheese award, and we actually got the owner, the director,
the guy that headed up,
the guy that runs the
Utah Cheese Awards.
We had him on the show, and he said the best cheese they get is still the Polygamists
down in southern Utah.
Down in southern Utah. Yeah, they have some of the best.
The Promontory Point or something like that. They make Parm down there.
Yep.
One of our cheeses won the gold medal at the first Utah Cheese Awards, and I feel envious of anybody who gets to eat that much cheese in a day. And if he ever retires, I am ready
to take over.
Waiting in the wings.
He's always looking for judges.
I am a judgy broad.
See?
Well, and you have a cheese background. You're a cheesy judgy broad.
I think I'm mostly made of cheese at this point.
I mean, I don't see a problem with that.
So the market, you don't just have high-end stuff from outside of the country. You guys do focus a lot on local products, right?
Yeah. We wanted to have a really good balance of the highest quality specialty foods from where our ancestors came from.
Yeah, like authentic.
But we also wanted to have the best-in-class local ingredients. There's a lot of people making a lot of delicious things in Utah, and we can't do it all, but to be able to bring in, like, the gold medal winners of every category.
Kombucha.
Or just the fact that, like, you're sourcing your bread locally. It's not just that it's local. It's the fact that it's going to be so fresh, which means we don't have to deal with all of the other stuff that if you're shipping it in,
right,
that we've got to, you know, handle on top of that. And it just, I mean, you can tell when you're eating it. It's so
good. The France Bakery is nowhere near as good as Stone Ground.
Well, if you had all these amazing ingredients and you just put them on some Harmon's bread, no offense, Harmon's, but it would not be the same. It would not be good.
Yeah, and there's a time and a place for those things. Like, when I go camping, I know I want a white bread PB&J. And if you try to give me something fancy, I will be upset. You'll have ruined my camping trip. But
boxed wine and Jack Daniels. That's camping.
There's a time and a place for it all. There's a time and a place for American cheese product, but it's not on a charcuterie board, and it's not when you're trying to impress your friends.
Like, so in our house, in our group of friends, like, we have charcuterie meals, and in our basement, we probably have 10 to 12 charcuterie boards that were just like, oh, you came over and you didn't have a charcuterie board? Here's one for you. We have big long ones and little round ones and ones with feet and ones without. And
our Christmas party this year was movie-themed charcuterie boards. So Christmas,
so it wasn't like traditional charcuterie, obviously, so, but
Gremlins. I did Gremlins. We had someone do Grinch.
You guys did Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation.
It was great.
My heart
is singing. So charcuterie is a huge deal in our
It's a lifestyle.
Friend group. It's so good. It's so fun, and it's fun to find, like, assign somebody. Okay, you're doing the cheeses or whatever, and have them like find fun cheeses.
I know why it's a lifestyle. When we were all kids, Lunchables were the highly sought after item.
Maybe when you were a kid. I don't think they existed when we were kids.
They might be garbage, but like in lunchroom trades, like Lunchables were the gold standard, like as a little kid.
I 100% agree with that. I lead with that for our cheese boards classes we do online. We are predisposed to sticking cheese and meat and crackers together and shoving them in our face. We've been doing it since we were young, and now we have more disposable income.
And so we just get better meat, cheese, and crackers.
Who doesn't just crave that? Like, if you're not craving that, there's something wrong with you. Like, because there are some times when Chris is just like, I kind of just want, like, cheese and crackers. Mm-hmm. Like, let's go
get some cheese.
Let's go find some cheese. Because usually we have some sort of meat still around and some crackers. And that's usually the piece that we're missing. We got
to
go find some cheese.
It's fun to go to Harmon's or one of those places where they've got the cheese. And, you know, it may be $5 or $6 for a little piece, but you're going to cut it up and you're going to put it on a charcuterie. And it's...
What? I don't remember what cheese it was, but the cheese... monger, I guess, mm-hmm. cheesemonger at Harmon's one time was opening like a wheel of cheese and like going through it. And I just stood in the thing.
It was a brand new wheel of Parmesan.
And when she got done, she's like, do you want a piece? I was like, yes, I want a piece. And the breaks off a little bit. And she just like, it was probably like this big. And I was just like, I don't think I have ever had this fresh.
That's the
cheese.
Most like ideal time to have any like, it sounds so oxymoronic to say you should have a really fresh piece of a very old aged cheese, but if you figure like a wheel that big, it's a living, breathing thing. It's putting off excrement. It's continuing to develop in flavor. And the minute you crack into it, those first 10 to 15 minutes are transcendent. It's a heightened flavor. It's more aromatic. It's more floral.
Good.
If you were ever
because the air
in breeze position. Exactly. Yeah. But if you're ever in breeze position and you see it at Harmon's or Caputo's, you put your hands out like it's communion and you get blessed.
Yep.
And they'll give it to
there's
you.
There's nothing better.
Yep. That means for those of you in LDS land, that means your right hand under your left hand so that you can just...
Yeah.
You non-Catholics.
Right. I will remember that forever just because I just sat there watching her and I'm like, do you mind? And she's like, no, I don't mind. She's just right there. It's not like she was in the back or something, but yeah, just watching how she did it and watching her manipulate the wheel and everything. And then like the little crumblies that were just kind of coming. She just gave me one when she was done and I was like, oh, this is fantastic. I'm like, Chris, where are you? And he was, I don't know, off getting meat or something. I don't know.
So we have these little cartons.
Ah, yes.
What are the little cartons?
So these ones are cheese. This is perfect.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
So this first one is the first cheese that we ever had success with in our cheese caves. It's called Grotti Caputo. Take a piece. See what you think. This is an Asiago at its base, made by a different Caputo brand. Caputo is a very common name in southern Italy, so no relation, but we love them dearly. This is one that we age anaerobically, so we could technically age this somewhere else. The temperature would still affect it.
I love hard cheeses.
It's aged for about 14 months, so you start to see the development of those little crystals. But because it's aged in a plastic bag, we don't lose any of the moisture, so you get this really fudgy... very satisfying texture, but with that crystalline development still feels really satisfying. And it's just one of those flavors that is really quite impossible to not like if you like cheese and can consume dairy.
It's got a really light, nutty taste mm-hmm. to it.
Yeah.
I love cheese that you don't have to bite. I really like hard cheeses.
So this is also the base of a few other cheeses we do now. We do this same thing wrapped in a truffle butter that we make in-house. So European butter, truffle salt, truffle shavings, Grotte Tartufo. We do another version that we did in collaboration with the Copper Onion Restaurant Group.
Oh, I love the Copper
and
Onion.
And that one is packed in this cherry compote. So it's Montmorency dried cherries, Luxardo Maraschino liqueur, and brandy all cooked down to this, like, decadent paste. And we slather some through the center and all around the outside. So it's like a cherry cheesecake.
Yeah, cheese I can imagine
dessert
that.
Is the best dessert.
I could 100% imagine that.
So this isn't, plus cherry.
Isn't Utah the second largest exporter
of tart cherries in the country?
That was the whole inspo behind doing it, and it's
again,
phenomenal.
Second largest is like Michigan's 80-something percent.
It was like way behind.
And then us.
Yeah. It's not like we're close, but...
It's really absurd how many cherries Michigan produces. Tart cherries, to be clear. Tart cherries specifically. That's still one of my favorite things to do, though, like at the farmer's market. It's just to go get a bag of cherries from those guys. They're so good.
Do you eat half of them before you leave?
Yeah. Well, it depends on how big the bag is, which size I get.
Yeah, if we get the little bag, yes. If we get the bigger bag, it takes a little longer to get through.
I respect that.
But it also depends on which food trucks I stop at first.
So yeah. Yep.
Speaking of cherries, it'll be cherry season here pretty soon. Is it cherry very early in the season?
Very early, usually early June, maybe... And it depends on how hot it gets. Because if it's really mild in June and then like increases in temperature, the season's longer. But if it gets really hot really fast, the season's like 2 weeks.
Wow.
So about a month, month and a half, it'll be cherry season.
It's a really great time to have goat cheese and cherries.
Oh, yeah. Any soft cheese, really.
This one?
Yeah, let's do that one.
Okay.
So this one is the one that was born as Beehive's Promontory Cheddar.
Okay.
We
That's such a good one.
For a year, but the first 6 months, we wrap them in butter-soaked bandages, and they get aged in Cheesecave 1. And then after those 6 months, we unbandage them and re-bandage them.
I feel so bad our podcast is not smell-a-vision, smell-a-hearing, I don't know.
What is this one? Okay, I'm interested to know what you guys think this one smells like. I think it smells like a gym bag.
This?
There is like a deep mustiness to this one that I think is very, very satisfying.
Maybe if you're smelling the whole wheel and not just a little scent.
Maybe.
I mostly get like library from it. Like old paper.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Parchment-y.
Yeah. Like so like library, like book smell, which I love.
There is some like wet earth to it. Also kind of like mushroomy.
So good with whiskey.
With what?
Whiskey. I think it would complement a whiskey so well because it's got a lot of those same flavor profiles.
Cheddar does love whiskey.
So I think the reason creamy cheddar.
The reason it gets the like slight savoriness that it does is because we finish it in 6 months of duck fat soaked bandages. And you're not, like, smelling or tasting notes of, like, duck confit or canard de whatever. Like, it definitely just interacts with the water content of the cheese differently and the flora of bacteria we've developed in our cave over the years. I think our cave finally has its own terroir. Like, when things go in there, they come out tasting distinctly like they were aged
here. Well, it's like Tabasco, the Tabasco brand, the little Tabasco. So there's a place in Louisiana that it's made, and it's been made there forever and ever and ever. They moved the factory to another place. Could not duplicate, moved back. That is the only place they can age Tabasco to get that taste. Nowhere else will work.
Yeah.
Everyone talks about terroir like it only exists in wine. There's terroir in so many things we eat with sense of taste and place.
Well, there's so many,
a lot of things.
There's so many factors that go into that stuff. I mean, temperature control, like what the normal humidity, the ambient temperature is. What's in the air, what's in the soil, what's in the water, like that all plays a big impact on how things develop over time.
And there's a lot of opportunity to mess it up along that journey. Right. And the people that don't are going to heaven.
Speaking of that, do you guys let people in a cheese cave? Like, do you do tours of your cheese cave?
We used to, and now we're not allowed to because we have aged raw milk cheeses. We are now monitored by the federal government to ensure that we're not killing people. So you can stick your nose against the glass, but that's about as close as we can get. And if you are nearby when the door opens, you can still get a smell of it, and it does not smell sexy in there. It smells like the rhino exhibit at the zoo.
Because it's aging cheese.
Yeah. The excrement is ammonia, so it just smells like...
Well, not only that, but like... Like, when we talk about some of these smells individually, they might not be offensive, but when you smell, like, what you are depicting as, you know, dirty socks, and somebody else is depicting as, you know, their uncle's feet or whatever it is, and you get all of those smells together, that's probably not pleasant.
Well, do you separate them, or are they all in the same cave?
We have two different caves, and we try to keep the cheeses separate. One is a much more high moisture cave, so that's where the Grottes go, but also the Taleggio, the wash rind cheeses, the ones that need a lot more moisture to really be healthy. Those stay in one cave, and then the things like the cheddar,
the dryer,
and like the Chabrin and Osso Irati, a lot of the Basque ones, those all end up in Cheese Cave 1, which is kind of like our original one that has the most developed terroir in it.
Both caves are here, right?
They are. Yeah. Yeah. We're working on building a third one here probably in the next 3 or 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Well, wheels or bricks or whatever of cheese does each cave hold?
A lot. gosh, I would guess if Cheese Cave 1 were completely full, we could probably fit 150 to maybe 200 wheels if they were the smaller ones.
Wow.
It's a good size cave.
Yeah, a lot, because wheels of cheese are huge.
And they stand there for a long time.
Nothing like the Parmigiano Reggiano caves in Italy, but...
But they're, yeah, I will never have anything that large, I don't think.
Those are amazing to see. I'd love to see them in purses.
We have
in
one.
Person.
I'll go find it. They're 90 pounds.
Oh, the wheels? Yeah, I'm talking about like the cave where they age those.
Scary.
It's beautiful. They're like forklifts to move those up and down. Like, they're enormous caverns.
Did you guys hear about the earthquake that happened about a decade ago that almost ruined the entire industry?
Oh, I didn't. I can imagine, though. That's sad. That would be so sad.
Well, like, Parmigiano Reggiano is one region of Italy. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear about
that? Yeah, if you don't get your cheese from
there.
The cheese heist. Yep.
They still can't find it.
Nope.
It's been years. Missing cheese. How do you lose, like, thousands of pounds
of cheese? It's probably
in
with the government cheese.
Also, yeah, I was going to say, a lot of people don't realize we have a cheese reserve in the U.S.
Government cheese.
Much like oil reserve.
Well, and, like, most of our pizza places, like Pizza Hut and Domino's and stuff, get their cheese from the government cheese stores. Did you know that? Yeah, they get it at a discount from there, and then they charge you extra for cheese.
Extra cheese. Dirty bastards.
Yep. I don't like cheese it. Reserves.
One cheese, more cheese.
Government cheese reserves.
This last one is Tony's Flowers. Tony's? So this is the one that we named for Tony Caputo. The cheese is made in Rexburg, Idaho, by Lark's Meadow Farm. They're the smallest cheese producer we work with right now.
It looks like pineapple in here.
I like
it's so special.
Oh,
so it's
man,
primarily sheep's milk,
lovely.
But a little bit of cow's milk. It gets aged for a few months, and then we age it in our caves to finish it off and pack it in this really beautiful mixture of herbs, aromatics, florals. They were put together by a guy named Josh Williams, who is an expert in herbs and... treats it like an apothecary. So you get like some lavender, some mint, some rose petals, some marigold. But it's a nod to Tony's last job here. When Tony retired, quote unquote retired, he still came in at 5 o'clock every morning to taste the meatballs to make sure they weren't poisonous and to slice the pastrami and to water the flowers we have outside in the summer months. So like when you walk up and you see all these beautiful flowers, it was always because of Tony. Mm. And when he passed, the flowers were
the first things to
suffer. And it took us a lot to bring it back, but this is a nod to that. So we donate a portion of these sales to the Tony Caputo Foundation that really does go primarily to Crossroads and the 4th Street Clinic. Tony had a really, really special place in his heart for the unhoused population in this area when he opened. There was nothing over here. It was a very desolate part of
town. I used to work at the Salt Lake Stamp building that's just over here. I used to work in the at the bottom of that. Yeah, and it was like this and like five other buildings.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best thing to use with this one? Like
this for me is a cheese board cheese. I think
cheese. Oh yeah, 100%. You just eat this cheese.
You could take this like to a grater though, and this grated over either grilled leeks or roasted asparagus is to die for.
I bet it's really good with like prosciutto.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This on a charcuterie board does great next to other cheeses and salumi just because it's so expressive, but also can play with a lot of other flavors because of all of that herbaceousness. So it is...
The cheese itself is very mild, but the herbs, like, they're really infused throughout the whole cheese, not just on that rind.
Yeah, it's special. We love it a lot.
So who tastes the meatballs now in the morning?
Yours truly.
That is fantastic. You have the best job.
I am the luckiest kid in America. I don't want to do anything else.
Meatballs made fresh daily?
We don't make the meatballs, but we do braise them, essentially, with the tomato sauce. So they spend 6 hours in a hot tub together before they go to you. So you get like a full infusion of those two things commingled over hours.
Do you guys make the sauce as well?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, all of our sauces that are frozen in our freezer are made by one woman. Sweet Jan has been making these sauces for years. They are perfected. There is nothing better. If you need like a quick weeknight meal, Jan has got you covered.
I don't want to like put anything out into the ether.
Into the ether.
Maybe y'all should have train someone.
Maybe she needs an apprentice.
She does have apprentices, but she's still nobody can do it like Jan does. I use her recipes, and they're still not the same.
Well, it's like trying to cook like your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're just never going to hit that same note.
Like, my grandmother makes what made amazing rum balls. I cannot make amazing rum balls, even following the same recipe.
That's because you try to just use rum and nothing else.
I think what makes Chris's kitchen so good is, so my family, I am not Italian, I am Spanish, but my grandmother made tortillas. And Chris doesn't do this with them, but he comes closer than my mom does to it. So, yeah. I think you need to come apprentice here and learn how to do something.
I mean, I know how to do a lot.
I know, that's what I mean. If you come here and apprentice here.
In what free time?
You don't have any free time right now. He's working one and three quarters jobs and going to school for his master's right now, plus helping me with the renovations.
Sure.
And then doing this podcast.
I have time. It's fine. I'll stick it in somewhere.
Got time to make tortillas out here, it sounds like.
I love tortillas. They're so good. I will say, like, the thing I remember, like, about my grandmother's cooking, as long as we're kind of talking about that, she could turn, like, the shittiest thing into something that was good. So, like, canned asparagus. If you've never had canned asparagus, not canned asparagus in the jar, like an actual can of asparagus, which is, like, the big fat pieces, always the bottoms, never any of the nice tops. She'd make that, and it tasted good to like a small child.
Wow.
I couldn't do that. Canned asparagus is nasty. It's so gross.
It's so funny because I'm not a vegetable eater. I was pretty spoiled. I'm an only child, and so nobody ever made me eat anything I didn't want to eat. But my kids, because he cooks so well, like they ask for asparagus. They ask for greens and vegetables and stuff. And the other day, my daughter made me dinner, and she brought it up to me, and they made kebabs, and they'd made asparagus. And when she came up to clear my plate, because her friends were down there cooking, so I was up in my room, when I heard her, she's like, my mom ate the asparagus, because whatever she did to it, it was actually... I mean, I wouldn't, like, eat a ton of it. Like, it's not still my favorite, but I was like, this is actually not too bad. I kind of, this, like, she's gotten to be a good little cook with it, so.
Has the gift.
So, how often are you guys doing classes here?
We do classes probably 3 to 4 times a week.
Oh, wow. So, all the
time. So tonight will be Tour of Italy, so it's more of a regional tasting. There's cheese and meat and olives and chocolate. Tomorrow is an oil and vinegar class. Thursday, we're doing an Island Time cocktail class at Holiday and a tour of Spain down here. So this is a 4-class week.
How many locations do you guys have?
We have 3. So this is our downtown store, the first one, the biggest one. The next one was the one on 15th and 15th. That one opened in maybe 2014. And then the newest one is in Holiday.
So what's the average cost for your classes? Or is every class just really different?
It kind of varies, but if you want to come to a class, you're going to pay $30 for an intro to chocolate class, and then all of our other classes are $40, and that gets you all of the education, all of the food, and then if you want to add on the alcohol pairings, that's when things start to vary. So,
right.
beer and cider classes are 20 extra, wine classes or wine pairings are 25 extra. And then, like, we do a class called the Big Fancy. Francis will bring his, like, very favorite special reserve bottles, and you're going to pay $95 for that class, but you're going to drink $250 bottle wines. Right. So,
awesome.
You can choose your own adventure.
I went on my first winery tour in California, and the very first wine had pepper in it, and my sister's, I know I just said I was an only child, that's a long story, but anyway, my sisters were like, and I was like, I'm down. I'm trying all of this stuff. It was delicious. It had pepper in it. And like when I tasted it, I didn't taste pepper, but oh, it was fantastic. Wow. And I enjoyed myself so much. So I highly recommend coming to something like this, because especially if I feel like growing up in Utah, sometimes you don't get exposed to some of the things that happen in the rest of the world, like not in the rest of the country, yeah. Even
not a lot of wine tastings in Utah.
Well, it's, I don't think it's that. I think it's just that, like, drinking can be such a
taboo.
Thank you. That was the word I was going to say. Faux pas. I was like, that is not what I'm looking for. But it's such a taboo that you end up with just whatever you can run in and grab off of the liquor store shelf. Mm-hmm. And if you like it, then you're just like, okay, this is the thing that I get. And you just go in and you get it, and you don't branch out. No. And you don't try things. And just going to the winery, really, I realized my palate has expanded. And so I really recommend doing something like this, because you can get a taste to taste all, like you said, you can taste all these cheeses and you can be like, yeah, no, this one tastes and smells like stinky feet. And this one, oh, this one kind of smells like a stinky feet, but man, I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out why. So like my sisters were like, they didn't like certain wines or whatever. And at the end, the sommelier was like, I don't think you like the tannins. And so she recommended the, you know, wines that would have less tannins in them for them to be able to drink. And
I think there's also just so much like douchebaggery,
yeah,
in food and wine. There, if you go to the wrong place, somebody can be so you can be so condescended upon, yeah, that it really dissuades you from ever wanting to ask questions to learn about your own palate or what you like or why you like, yeah, what you like. I think there's a lot of really, really easy ways to be turned away from wanting to know more or from being able to learn more. And our goal and a lot of other people's goals is to make food and wine education approachable, but also to empower you so that when you do go out to whatever it is that you're doing and you're bringing wine to your friend's house, that you can bring something that you know you like, or at least have a reference point to say, like, I know I like a Cabernet, so I can usually find a sweet spot in this like $20 to $30 range, and I know I like this region. And learning all of those things about your own palate only means you have a more delicious life, but you have things to share with people that may have had that kind of experience that turned them away from, right, learning more about their own tastes.
Well, like you said, like, also, just if you think about it, you can come to a class like this, even the most expensive one where you're paying like $100 a head. You're trying some of the best wines that you can get in the state, like easy, hands down. And you're trying a variety, and you're being led by someone who understands the variations and how to pair them and can tell you, like, if I kind of like this one, I don't really want to spend $200 a bottle for wine every time. And they'll tell you, oh, well, there's this other wine or these other three wines that, mm-hmm, are like, here's this $10 one, here's the $20 one, here's the $50 one. And they'll be able to give you that advice as well. So then you can go out and try those on your own.
And to that end, we have another wine class. It's called Big Wine, Small Dollar Signs. It's all of the ones that where you get a lot of value for a variety of reasons. There's this one loophole in Utah. If a winemaker makes less than a certain number of cases, we pay a discounted price here in Utah. So, like, Buckland Winery is one that, mm-hmm, I know is part of that. We will pay less for their wines here in Utah. We'll pay like $20. Everywhere else, it's $35.
Well, it's like Pappy Van Winkle. Why do you have to do the lottery for that stuff? Because by law, we can only mark it up a certain percent. It's set by the legislature. And so, you know, when we get small batch stuff like that, that's harder to get,
we can only give it a certain price.
Right. So you
everywhere
may pay,
else can set the price.
You may pay $95 for it here, but everybody else is paying $300.
Yeah. And that's not uncommon with the small batch stuff. So
look at us doing some things right.
Well,
I think Utah. I mean, that's what the whole podcast is about, right? The things that we do here that people outside the state don't realize are happening because amazing things are happening.
I'd still rather be free market in terms of liquor sales.
I mean, yeah.
Because the state is making money off you twice.
I mean, yeah.
The markup plus tax. Like, it's it's absurd that the state's doing that, but we're
still
not the worst.
No. No.
We could
and we
in,
have
like,
some really talented people here, and they come here and they stay, and there's a reason, whatever reason that is.
This is one of them, though. It's markets like Caputo's that do this kind of stuff, that have these amazing experiences. You don't get that in a lot of places.
Nope.
I mean, Albuquerque's nice, but this doesn't exist, Albuquerque.
No, it does not.
Yeah. I mean, we hear about Caputo's all the time from people when we do interviews about certain things because they either started here or they got an idea here or something like that. So we were really excited when we got to actually come here.
I mean, you guys are, we're not just trying to blow smoke up your ass, but Caputo's is an institution in Salt Lake.
Yep.
For a reason. I mean, you guys have been around for a long time for a reason.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of why I wanted to work here. I mean, I feel like I was raised in these walls, like even before I started working here, but there's obviously something very, very special about this place. I mean, I am biased and I know that, but
yeah, delis are a dime a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
So to be around that long says you have to do something right.
Yeah.
And to be able to open a market and do the cheese caves, like that's stuff that doesn't always last. And you've not just opened a market, but you expanded it and it's successful enough to keep it around.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm very grateful for this place. I feel like there's a lot of opportunity to learn more about yourself and your own history. We talk about things that people connect with because it tastes like something that their grandmother might have made, or it has the same, it gives you the same feeling, and it gives you an opportunity to eat with purpose. We carry things here that are going extinct, that are on this list on the Slow Foods Arc of Taste, things that are truly going to go away in the next generations, and to know that by eating it and by buying it, you're helping sustain these centuries-long traditions. It gives a really different perspective on why we eat the way we eat and why we're the only thing on this earth that eats together.
That is true, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen lions eat together.
Yeah.
Same, like, water buffalo or
Josh
whatever.
Might get your ass beat being a lion eating next to another one.
But yeah, I watched a hawk eat a dove in my yard last week. And
he was all by himself.
He was by himself.
Romance.
So is the other dove now.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Sad.
I haven't ever seen them together since then, so I'm pretty sure it was.
Me either.
Yeah, did you bring other stuff? There's like
chocolate.
There's little forks and spoons.
Are you interested in tin fish?
I am.
Sure.
I mean,
I'm not, but I think
well.
That these guys
I'll try anything.
Like it. It's hot girl food. Tin fish is
hot girl food.
It's so popular and trendy right now, but it's such an old tradition of how we found a way to survive and a way to do war.
As long as it's not sastramen.
No.
Sastrami?
Sastramen.
It's like Nordic.
Nordic fermented fish.
Yeah, not the yeah. No, nothing fermented, all tinned. There is a Portuguese squid in a calamari, and then there is a tuna pate.
Let's try it.
Oh, I think this will probably be milder.
Okay. When I was younger, I used to eat kipper snacks on saltines.
So did I.
But that was also poor people food when I was a kid. Like,
isn't that interesting? So I think that's a very common conception of any sort of tin fish in the States. We associate it with food stamps and poverty and
because it was cheap protein.
Well, exactly.
It was developed and perfected during World War II.
Yeah.
Canned food was a wartime ration.
It totally was.
That's the way a lot of things are. Like if you think about like lobster. Lobster was a poor man's food because it was like, you know, it's
the cockroach
bugs.
Of the sea.
Yeah, it's a cockroach of the seas. And so like lobster rolls and stuff were a common man food early on in the Northeast, and now it's fucking obscenely expensive. You know, you're paying $20 for a small
sandwich. The reason that during Lent, Catholics and whoever else celebrates Lent eat fish and not meat is because fish used to be what fishermen grabbed, and you could fish and fish and fish, and you fished daily, and that's what you ate, and you had to have refrigeration for beef and things like that, which meant it was rich. Or you had to slaughter the animal and eat it the same day. There wasn't any place that you could... I am not trying that. But I'm going to eat the last part of this sandwich. But yeah, they... And now it's switched around somehow. Now beef is cheap and fish is expensive, and I don't know, it's a weird change.
Just tuna.
It's just a tuna pate. It's good.
So yes. This is from a brand called Guayumar in Spain. There is one man that makes all these tents. His name is Abel. He's an asador. Wow. So they own a restaurant, but he grills all of the fish that go in every tin by hand and then cans them himself. This one is comprised of all of the fish that aren't the perfect fillets. So there's still a use for
all the
emulsifying
extra parts.
Yeah. Exactly. But like to your point about like fresh meats, I mean, Caputo's is a hot spot for ways that we found ways to survive. We couldn't eat the entire animal in one sitting, so we would pull off the back legs and hang them to dry with salt. And prosciutto is this luxury now, but it was the thing that was supposed to sustain you through the coldest, darkest months of winter when your vegetable stores ran out. And same thing with cheese. All of the Alpine-style cheeses like Comté and Gruyère, we made them in the summer so that next winter we had a nutrient-dense food that would keep us alive when everything else was gone.
All the salami, same thing. Like, those are all...
Most of them are cured, not cooked.
Yeah.
So they could produce it, they could set it out to dry, and it's a way to keep meat last without cooking.
That's early preserving, yeah.
There's such a special place in my heart for tinned fish, and I never really thought that it would be something that would be part of my normal diet, but you're now getting very high-quality fish in these tins that are prepared in these really decadent, delicious sauces, and... The cool part about these kinds of tins, the longer they sit in the can, the more delicate they get. So, like, the people that make Jose Gourmet are probably eating their tuna that they canned 4 or 5 years ago because the enzymes that permeate into the flesh will make it more supple, even sweeter, even easier to eat. You don't get any of that chewiness, but there's a lot of exotic things to try, too. I mean, we have baby eels, we have calamari and ragu, we have... scorpion fish that if you prepare it wrong, it could kill you. Obviously, we're bringing in the kind that doesn't kill you, but...
This is good. The little squid.
And it's a beautiful, cute little package.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, so this is a Portuguese brand. So the idea of canned fish being a delicacy really is from the Iberian Peninsula. Both Spain and France have a knack for making really, really delicious, freshly caught fish, putting it in tins immediately, and it's... exactly what it's supposed to be. There's a line that we carry from a brand called Espinalair. Their premium line has to be caught and canned within 24 hours, or it doesn't get to be part of that line.
That's such a quick turnaround. You'd like that.
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't bring myself to do it.
It's good. You'd like it. Just take a piece off of that one.
It is kind of like sliced through, so you could take like just a piece and not have to commit to the entire thing.
It is something I think you would enjoy, though, Brie.
It's really good.
I have to think about this.
It's a really good flavor.
It's delicious.
What's
the fish itself? So it's a tomato and vegetable ragu, but inside the squid, it's stuffed with rice that's been seasoned with garlic and onion and spices. So you basically get a whole meal in a can.
Well, and it's like... People think of, like, salty, like, full fit, and that's not what this is.
This is not salty at all.
It's very mild.
Yeah.
It's very, the texture is actually really, I would expect something a little bit more tough, but it's very, very smooth. And
yeah. There's a whole new, like, category to explore just in, like, these tins of seafood. I find that they're often delicious enough that, like, a lot of these I could pour over, like, fresh pasta or rice or even on potatoes, and there's some really, really nice cuts, like the tuna belly. Like, I mean, we think of like Toro at a sushi restaurant. They're canning that same cut, and it is this like silky, velvety, incredibly rich experience. And one of my favorite things to do with it is to toss that tuna with butter and pasta and a little bit of black pepper, and it sounds...
Sounds good.
It sounds humble, and it is, but... Well, goddamn, it's delicious.
The thing is, like you said... The cuts they use for sushi, there's still a lot of extra Toro mm-hmm. that they just don't use for sushi because it's not pretty. So you just take that and you can it, and it's amazing.
Yeah. I would into a pate, and it becomes richer and silkier.
I would eat that every day. That is so good.
Yeah.
So the other fun thing you can do with that, you can drop the entire tin before you open it in, like, simmering water and, like, heat it up. And then it's this, like, very, like, well-emulsified sauce. That going over, like, some crispy potatoes... Man, you don't need anything
good.
Else.
Those are good.
What'd you think, Bree?
I think it was okay.
I know it's not your thing, but
it is not my thing.
But it wasn't.
But it was
like
fine.
A,
no,
like a.
It wasn't as scary as I thought it was
betray
going to
you.
Be.
You should try that pate. It'll be. You would like it. It's just tuna.
It does. It is.
It's very good.
It's just
give her a spoon.
A couple more right here. Yes.
Yeah. If
yeah,
you
just
have
try
like
a little bit of it.
Just
salad.
You guys eating it. What do I care?
If you had like a tuna salad, like that would be perfect in it.
That's tuna niçoise.
I put this on just like freshly toasted sourdough with like some radishes, and
I bet it would be good on toast with like avocado.
It's like amazing. Potted ham, but tuna.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's good. It just tastes like tuna.
The flavors are, I think it's the texture that's getting me.
It's the pate.
Yeah.
You should try a tuna belly. If tins ever make it into your home, I would say start with a tuna belly. It is...
I'll get some.
But the flavor is definitely.
Yeah.
I love it because I will just eat.
I'll bring
tuna
some
out
kipper
of a
snacks in the house for you.
You could do a little side by side.
It's like saltine with a kipper snack and then a saltine with tuna belly and see what you like better.
I did. In college.
These guys grew up kind of poor and I didn't. And so sometimes the things that they.
I grew up really poor. My grandma made canned asparagus regularly.
Yeah. You just said that. Like my grandma made buñuelos and then saved the little leftover one for me and got mad at people
for breakfast.
Their hands, so.
We'd have lumpy dick.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
It's flour with a little bit of salt boiled in water.
My grandma made cabbage stew. It was one of my favorite dishes. I realize now that it was basically just all the garbage. Like really, it was like all the leftover pieces of other stuff throughout
the discard.
Week.
So, as I was saying, when I was in college in the late 1900s, you could get the kipper snacks. They'd be on sale. Mm-hmm. You could get like four for a dollar. So I would get a bunch of them, and I'd just buy a loaf of bread, put them right on bread, and just eat it.
Yeah. Why not? They're good.
Breakfast of champions.
They're very salty, though. Kipper snacks are really salty.
Some of them are. Like, it depends on what they're in. If they're just in the oil, they're not too bad. The tomato ones do not taste well on bread.
No. Also, the ones you get at like a regular grocery store, not good. They're not high quality. The stuff you'll get at Caputo's, they're not buying just anything.
It's more than a dollar a can here, I'm guessing.
It is. Yeah. we do have some that are like $5 or $6. We go from $5 or $6 all the way up to like $150.
Yeah.
There are some canned clams that were bought at auction in Spain, and for a bivalve, the larger they are, the more prized they are. And these were the biggest ones at the auction that year. And if you want the 4 to 6 of them that are in the can, you'll have to drop $160.
How big of a clam are we talking?
Four of them would fit in a tin like that.
Not real big. But,
no, for a clam, that's big. Because you got to understand, most clams...
Like, it doesn't matter that
like
the clam
really
is big this
olive.
Big. The thing inside is
yeah.
not.
The thing
like
inside
that?
Is like this. So, yeah, that's a big clam.
It's a big boy.
For the meat. Oh, yeah. I thought... Yeah, the shell would have been.
Oh, the...
Yeah, but she's not talking about the shell. Why would they have a shell in a tin?
It's like a... gosh, like double the size of a silver dollar.
That's a big clam.
Because I was going to say silver dollar, thinking that would be big.
I mean, it's not a gooey duck. Those big old...
No, those phallic little buggers. We have those.
Is it good?
It is good. I mean, if you like clams, it's the same family. It tastes like it. I had to slice mine because the idea of just like... sticking it in. Yeah, nope.
And it's always got like all that liquid inside, right?
Uh-huh.
I feel so dirty when I eat it. I feel so dirty.
So it's not like if you slice it, the liquid comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you just bite into it, it's just...
explosive.
I don't know. I don't
I'm
think
sorry,
I can do it.
Grandma.
You've seen the Gooey Duck, right?
Yeah.
What a Gooey Duck
have
is.
You seen, have you watched the Dirty Jobs episode where he harvests
the gooey ducks? Yeah.
Oh, I haven't.
Mud pits.
Well, I have plans tonight.
Hilarious. You got to watch that one. I love Dirty Jobs, but yeah, he does the
gooey
ducks.
That's a good one. We have Gooey Duck and we have barnacles. Barnacles are the ones that freaked me out the most. Those things look like prehistoric claws come to get you. Delicious.
Because I've never had.
I've had it fresh and it's really hard to eat fresh because you have to like.
Crack open the.
Pull
invasive
them out.
Parasites that we eat. So
I mean.
Weird.
When the aliens
that's
come,
a good use for them.
Us.
Lobsters and barnacles.
So what's the chocolate?
Chocolate o'clock.
I'm not gonna, you brought chocolate over. I'm not going to skip
so
on that.
So these are these.
Okay.
Unless you've had these bars, I'm 99.9% sure you've eaten chocolate that was intentionally farmed and grown as such. These are from wild foraged found cacao in the Amazon.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
This one is made. This is like, I think, maybe my favorite story in food
so,
right now.
To me, this smells like a stout.
Oh, I love that.
Which one is that?
It's the Wild Juduwa.
Think
I just smelled the microphone thinking I was smelling chocolate. So
it smells like dirty feet. Smell it.
100%.
That smells like
nice
stout.
Call. So this is made by a woman named Louisa Abram. She's based in Sao Paulo. And she is her entire brand is committed to only making chocolate from found and foraged cacao from the Amazon. So her family will travel into the Amazon through various river pathways, teach these local communities who are really far removed from the economy how to find, ferment, and dry cacao, and then she'll bring it back to Sao Paulo and make chocolate. Mm. This bar was part of her own brand's line, and in 2020, she and her family went back up the Juduwa River pathway to talk to them about the next harvest, and they sent her away. They were livid at her. They got swindled into something very similar to like a fair trade cooperative. These people came in and said, we can get a better price for all of the food and stuff that you buy. So we'll help you do this harvest. We'll collect the money, buy all the supplies and bring it back.
Oh,
they collected
no.
all the money and disappeared. So these people never got paid for this harvest of cacao from 2019 to 2020. So Luisa's dad called us to tell us that this bar would have to be discontinued. And we felt like the white assholes in a first world country that completely took advantage of somebody unknowingly. So after we felt sorry for ourselves, Matt and Yelena offered to pay for that cacao, that chocolate that we'd already bought and sold. We paid for it again just as
wow.
an offering to make up for it. But then as a show of good faith, we also offered to prepay for the next harvest so they could build their own fermentation houses, do all their own work so they'd never have to rely on anybody else ever again.
That is fantastic. That's a
and
great
they said,
story.
Yes, thank you.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah, this is why I'm so proud to
oh,
work
this
here.
Is
like,
so
I
good.
Just, they care so much about the people that make these foods and not just bringing expensive foods to people that can afford it. It's about the traditions of our ancestors and not just the Caputo's ancestors, our collective ancestors, everybody. It's, we've been eating cacao since 5000 BC, but to be able to eat cacao from the place where we believe it originated from people that have cultivated that land for centuries and centuries, it feels pretty special. So they let us have a hand in the packaging. And if you like open it, so on this one, like, sorry, podcast people, but
we can take a picture.
Like you can, this is the river pathway that they have to go up to get to this cacao. So like even the packaging tells us.
I got to be honest, when you were telling that story as I was eating the chocolate, I started feeling worse and worse about eating the chocolate.
Oh,
like, oh shit, I savor this more because it's never going to happen again.
I mean, who chews this kind of chocolate? Did you guys chew this chocolate?
No.
You can chew it to like break it down
yeah.
and then
well,
like,
how
it,
like is, no, you just, you, yeah, you just
it
set it in your,
so well.
You just set it in your mouth and it's sitting up at the roof of my mouth right now, just melting as I talk. And
so
every time I say a word, my tongue touches the roof of my mouth. It's just fantastic.
So this is the Wild Tranquilidad. This one is from Bolivia. A gentleman named Volker Lehmann, got really interested in cacao, started cultivating this, learned about chocolate sort of from the locals, but realized there was a lot more to it and started really getting the cacao into the hands of people that could make delicious chocolate. So this one is Tranquilidad beans. It's a Benigno bean, so it's a much higher fat bean than a lot of other ones, but it's made by Ritual. So Bolivian cacao made here in Utah, part of this wild line. This one for me, I call this my sad girl chocolate. Like, if I need to have, like, a good cry and a bath, this is what comes to the bathtub with me. This makes me feel infinitely better and comforted immediately.
So I'm not a sweets person. I really don't like sweets. This is what
Well, that's because this is not sweetened chocolate.
Well, I know. So that's why I say this is... I love this. I love this kind
Dark of chocolate. Chocolates are my favorites.
Yeah.
Anything that's not sweetened, that's... Yeah.
I mean, there's some sweetness in it, but it's
well,
not
yeah.
like...
Well,
they're both 70%. And, like, the human palate really does need some sugar to really let the flavors unfold. We have 100% bars. They taste like dookie on their own.
Yeah.
But having a little bit of sugar really lets the cacao do the talking. So you still get this, like, plant matter flavor profile.
This is fabulous.
Do you guys want to try a chocolate bonbon? We were talking about filled chocolates.
Yeah.
I feel like this would be a place where you should try one. I'm taking my chocolate
to go. Definitely
going to
do that.
So while she's gathering that, we'll make a plug for Caputo's. You guys have got to come here.
100%.
They have all kinds of different things you can try, from meals to just sampling.
And they have the whole market. There's that fresh, it's closed now, the fish place.
But. Aquarius Fish is what it's called.
Which is not part of them, but it's right next to it. So you can stop, get some sushi fish after you have your meal and grab your stuff at the market.
And really, you can go to any of the Caputos. They all, like, at lunch, they're fairly busy because that's very popular. But like she said, it's quick. Like, the sandwiches that they make, they have down... You know, they're pumping them out pretty quick at all the locations.
And if you try any of the sandwiches we just tried, you won't be disappointed. Those were so good.
That muffaletta was out of this world.
It was so good.
And you can get the gardenia mix, but that's only a small part of what was in that muffaletta. Like the olive mix that they use, the peppers were like that. Sweet and spicy oil, and it just goes so good with the rest of the meat and stuff on it.
Yeah. And we'll have to ask her, but I'm assuming you can buy just the meats from the deli?
Yeah, I would assume so.
We'll have to ask
her. Ask her that question. But yeah, you could buy just about everything they put on there, like on the sandwich. You could buy separate. Like she said, they tried to do that during COVID to send out those sandwiches.
To try to give to people.
I am so, like, I'm so glad I didn't eat. I didn't know how much there was going to be. Oh, it's so good.
We were talking amongst ourselves. The meats and stuff that you sell here, can people buy just the meats, like, from the deli?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's what
I thought. The ones that we put on the sandwiches and otherwise are all available. If you want to make your own version of a Caputo.
And I just want you all to know.
Oh, my God, this is beautiful.
She ran and got these fresh bonbons, and she put on a glove like a good food worker.
She has a food handler's permit. Let the record show. So these are quite juicy in the middle. Explosive, again, in their own way.
They're bonbons.
Yeah, so I think it's a one-bite thing.
Don't try to
cut it in half.
Cheers.
They're very beautiful. They've got a nice sheen. They've got a great pattern. They're red with some black speckles, like a wave pattern on top. I'm talking through all three of them eating, and then I'll eat it.
Good
I just want to let
so
it
good.
Sit in my mouth for a second.
The chocolate is melting in my finger, so I'm going to set it back down because it's
that
a fresh bonbon.
That chocolate has the perfect snap to it. What do you guys make those?
We don't. Chris Blue makes them. The chocolate shell is Solstice. And this is his passion fruit caramel. It was
so
the first chocolate bonbon we ever carried, and probably the only one we'll ever carry.
It's got the sweet, but it's got that tiny bit of tart.
Oh, that's delicious. Really, I just let it sit in my mouth for a second.
Yeah.
While all the juice that burst out was still there.
There's like the saltiness from the caramel.
Yeah.
That's just.
And I usually don't like salty sweets, but that was just the right amount of salt.
Like, it's the kind that, like, makes everything taste more like itself and not
like not
salt,
like, oh,
as a
there's salt
flavor
on
profile.
This thing. Yeah, I don't
so
like that.
Cool thing about this, he will sous vide an entire passion fruit. There's an entire passion fruit in every single one of these.
Wow.
So he'll sous vide it and like boil it for 2 days so it extracts all the natural sugars, and he'll make the caramel with that sugar as opposed to making a cane sugar caramel and adding passion fruit flavor.
Wow.
He is a master. So he was the pastry chef at Charlie Trotter's in Chicago before it closed. He is the best at what he does.
So absolutely beautiful and perfect.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
That's why there was so much flavor. Such a little bite.
Yeah.
So much flavor.
I'd pay so much money for that. That is so good. Holy cow.
And everyone.
Yeah. And every single one of his filled chocolates are just like that. Like, he's buying like $80 a gallon cream and using some of the best chocolate in the world. I mean, if you're going to have a treat, you should have a treat.
So sometimes when my husband and I, during Lent, he's not Catholic, but during Lent, It comes right after Halloween, where there's lots of candy, and Thanksgiving, where there's lots of desserts, and Christmas, where there's candy, and New Year's and everything. And so we'll try and go sugar-free. And so the way that we do that is by going to these places like Chocolate Conspiracy and mm-hmm. Solstice, and looking for things that are sweetened with something other than a regular sugar. So mm-hmm. with honey, with whatever it is that they're doing, because it's just as satiating when we're like, oh, we want something sweet. And you only need a couple bites, unlike, you know, a Hershey's bar where you want to eat the whole thing. You eat a couple bites of these, and they're rich, and they taste so good. Like, they're enough.
Yeah.
I have a bite of a Hershey's bar once every, like, 3 years, and I'm like,
We use them for, like, s'mores sometimes, but we've actually taken to just using striped cookies.
Bless.
So, best way for people to get a hold of you guys to do classes, that sort of thing, what's the addresses?
The best way to sign up for a class, I would say do it from your home, online, caputos.com. There's a little place to click on classes on the homepage. You don't need to scroll anywhere, but this one is 314 West, 300 South in downtown Salt Lake. The 15th store is 15th South and 15th East. The one in Holidays on Murray Holiday Road and like 41st South. So you can visit us in store, online. We want to make it, again, accessible and easy to get the things you want to have.
And I'm sorry, listeners, we don't have our affirmation because we're on site today. So you just have to live with it.
I think our affirmation has to do with something with just like
chocolate and cheese.
Well, no,
meat.
Just like find what you like and enjoy what you like. And this is a good place to come and try and do that because there's a lot of stuff here.
I would say try something new. Anytime you go somewhere, try a different wine or a different beer that you haven't had mm-hmm. before. Try local. Always try local whenever you go somewhere. You may be surprised. It may not be good. It may be wonderful. No. But don't be afraid to try new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can find us on social media at TNU Podcast everywhere. Join our Patreon, patreon.com/TNUP.
We've got chickens to name.
We do have chickens to name. and have a good week. Try something new.